And we are back. Black and a Half, episode number 175. And today is a Black and a Half reviews edition. That's right. This is almost a bonus one because we still have another episode coming out this week. 176 will be out in a day or two. But today, I want to review a couple movies that have been out. Wanted to get it out last week. Could not make it happen. But here I am to review Marvel's new film, Shang-Chi and the Legend of Ten Rings, as well as Coda, which is an Apple TV Plus exclusive. So I'm going to review those two films today. It's just me, Sas Lindenstein. Thank you so much for listening. Again, as always, please, if you haven't yet, please go to Apple Podcasts and leave a review, a 5-star review with some comments, write them just a little like, love listening to them, something like that. Ones with comments have more weight than ones without. That's why. And of course, if you want to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/blackandhalf and become a member of the League of Extraordinary Listeners. And for just a little bit more, you could become an Inner Circle member like Stefan Ward, Keith Nagel, Tara Widener. Become one of them, one of our Patreon supporters. Yes, that's what you can do. And also, I have my other podcast, You're Buying a Home with Silas Sundenstein, where I educate and empower home buyers all across the nation. But yeah, and check that out at yourbuyingahome.com. Now, we're going to review, do this episode. This is episode of reviews. I don't know why I feel nervous. I don't know. I'm by myself. It's weird. But yeah, we're going to review those two films right after this theme song. Episode number 175, Shang-Chi and Coda.
Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by.
Okay. Thank you, Aileen Perron. She did that introduction music years ago, but it's always nice to hear it. It's nice having a theme song. So now I know if there's ever a WWE event that I get invited to, because I've hit that stature, I have my theme. There we go. Okay. Shang-Chi and the Legend of Ten Rings. I'm going to start off with that one today. Also, if you're familiar with Letterboxd, I'm trying to do reviews on there. Letterboxd, it's an app. It's like Boxed without an E in it. Something like, just type in Letterboxd and Apple Podcasts or Apple in your app store and you should get it. I'm trying to put some reviews up there. Not my full reviews, just my, just the outline of it. If you want to listen to the full review, it's going to be here. But for now, until I get a dictation service that will review what I say here. Shang-Chi and the Legend of Ten Rings, from Marvel, on the theaters right now, rated PG-13. It's an action adventure, 2 hours and 12 minutes, written by Destin Daniel Cretton, Andrew Lanham, and Dave Callahan, directed by Destin Daniel Cretton. The cast: Simu Liu as Shang-Chi, and Awkwafina, she's in it, and then the whole bunch of people I don't know. Benedict Wong makes an appearance from Doctor Strange, and Michelle Yeoh, who we know from Star Trek Discovery, and I feel like there's some other things she's been popping in life. So she's becoming a queen of sci-fi. And Ben Kingsley makes an appearance, and you may remember, he's in the cast. So if you've seen the cast list, that may be a tad spoiler, but sorry, but Ben Kingsley's in the movie. And so you may remember him from Iron Man 2, I believe. So I believe it's Iron Man 2. Yeah. Yeah. I'm going with two. I don't think it's one. Could be one. I don't know. We'll see. It's from one of the Iron Man films. So the story of this. Shang-Chi is forced to confront his past when his father, Wenwu, the leader of the Ten Rings organization, draws Shang-Chi and his sister, Zeling, into a search for a mythical village. The best things about this film, the action, besides crazy, crazy good martial arts, we have some great chase scenes, both in cars and through buildings. In that way, it is definitely identifies as a good Marvel film. And the action, you go for the big screen. I feel sorry. I mean, I went and saw this in the theater. It was more people in it than I felt comfortable with. I thought there'd be less people, but a lot of people showed up for this, I guess, which is nice for them. I wish I found a less to 10 viewing, but I really like, if you can see a viewing that doesn't have a lot of people, I would go, because it's made for that. I can't help but think this is not going to seem as impressive on the little screen. The little screen on your little, like, 75-inch flat screen, whatever. Okay, number two of the three best things, the diversity, the continued diversification of the MCU. Because now, yes, this is a big deal that it is an all or a mostly Asian cast for the first time, but also one that takes place, in, I'm going to say in China. I'm not sure what the mythical village is exactly, but that's just not based in America and not in Eastern Europe as the only other place we've gone. I think we went to Wakanda, so Africa too. Okay, so the big deal here is that there is a huge segment of it that takes place in the in fictional Chinese locations, right? And it adds to it. It makes the world feel bigger suddenly. That's what's important about both Black Panther and this one. The world of Marvel suddenly feels bigger when we're outside of New York or L.A. I can't think of an L.A. Marvel one, actually, but yeah. Okay. And number three, the playfulness. Like all Marvel movies, there is an amount of fun to it. And I did really enjoy the humor. Aquafina. She's definitely the comic relief mostly in this, though they do get a little serious with her, which was a nice mix. It's nice when the comic relief also, we see a serious through line with them as well. Yeah. So she's mainly spearheads it, and there's a lot of playfulness. Some could argue maybe a little too much, maybe a little too playful. Even in some of the, as we get into some of the legends in the film, maybe could it be too whimsical? I don't know. I was trying to figure out where this is, how it grounds it. Marvel's in the midst of experimenting. When we did Guardians, we got a raccoon, right? Running around. There's an element when it's gone off Earth now that makes it less, serious. And I did worry about some of this and some of the creatures that we see in this makes it less almost silly. And people, I've always thought of, DC can be kind of silly, even though they take themselves way more seriously in the world, I think. But Marvel, this is very playful, and it's a bold choice. Yeah. Okay, three worst things about the film. I got the question: where did the black people go in the universe? There was like a there's a bus driver, and like that's it. And in some ways, you know, well, oh, well, they definitely made this for China. Little problem with showing black people over there. And I don't know. I feel like they just kind of gave in. And I just was like, well, it's great to add in the diversity of another segment of the population, but you don't have to take away completely black people. Like, what is it even out from Black Panther? And I will say, hey, at least Black Panther, they showed up, you know, they went to South Korea. Stop over there. They couldn't like have the plane change planes in Uganda or something on this one. Like, come on. They could have changed planes in Wakanda. That would have been even better. Make it, keep it in. Number two, I'm not immediately clear how this fits into the greater scope of films. There is I don't know if it's the end credit scenes, which there are, it's post credit, as you know. Watching the film, I'm not sure. How is this going to be used? Where does this fit in the world? Like, it's an origin story for Shang-Chi, but I don't know how he's going to become more with this, or if he is. So how he's going to be used? Is he important for phase four? I don't know. I can't tell from this, where I feel like I could in a lot of other movies. Like, I feel like they could drop him and it wouldn't matter. And I don't think you'd say that with a lot of the Marvel films. Maybe with Guardians of the Galaxy, and they did end up instrumental in Endgame, or the Endgame, the sequels there, the Avengers films. So we'll see. Number three, and this goes back to some of the playfulness that I talked about, but there's a lot of legends in this film. They talk about legends a lot in this. And for some reason, the way they're shot, the way they're run, I don't know that it doesn't fit the way we've seen Marvel so far. There's a whimsy in it that I don't know fits right now. And, you know, even my daughter, when we left, she was like, I just don't know if that didn't feel like a Marvel film. And I was like, yeah, I feel that way too. I felt like it was a great action film, but I wasn't sure why it doesn't have. Why I was like, oh, that, I mean, other than a couple crossover characters, like this could have been done outside of the Marvel universe and I'd accepted it. And I do think it's that there is some whimsy in there that we're not used to in Marvel films. And yeah, so it doesn't quite fit. So maybe we're going to see more in that direction and that'll help. Okay. The lesson. I always like to find lessons in it. I came up with two lessons from this film. One, number first one, no matter where you come from, you shape your own path forward. Okay, that's lesson number one. Lesson number two, to heal from loss, you'll believe anything. And I can't really explain that until you see it. Sometimes I'm always trying to just do a review, like a show where it's just a critique show where we talk about these rather than, I don't want to spoil anything, but I also want to talk about this. So somebody talk to me about this, okay? And so my final word on the film, Shang-Chi is another strong introduction of characters into the Marvel Universe. While it's marinated in made-up Chinese legends, it sets itself apart from other films in that it could exist outside that universe and still be a well-regarded action film. My verdict? Okay, so I have the 3L system. You either love it, like it, or lose it. Love it, that's a film. You watch it and you start talking to other people about it right away. You're texting them, you're calling them. As soon as you bump into them, you're like, have you seen this film? You got to see it. Like it? It's like, hey, I like that film. That was cool. All right. But you don't get that excited. Like, you don't message somebody right about it, but you would recommend it maybe. And of course there's like it films that aren't even like that good. Right. So like it can be an extreme, But you might, you know, I put your remote down and finish it like I do with The Core every time that's on. That's a horrible film, but I like it. And I watch it every time it's on TV. It's the only time I'd watch it. I'm not going to plan myself. It's like, oh, if it catches me, I'm like, oh, I got to watch it. You found me. Or lose it. I lost part of my existence watching it. I wasted 2 hours of my time watching this film so that you don't have to lose it. Don't ever see it. Okay. That's my 3L system. Love it, like it, or lose it. Shang-Chi gets a like it. I really did like it. A lot of people were posting on about this film right after saying, gotta go see it. I wasn't one of them. I thought it was okay. You know, that's the way it goes. And now let's move on to the second film, one less talked about and heard of as much, Coda, a 2021 film out of the US of A. It was actually a Sundance audience favorite, I believe. I gotta have that section so that I can talk about it here. But yeah, it's PG-13. It's a coming of age story. It trails in at 1 hour and 51 minutes. It's a coming of age comedy drama. And then it was funny, I have this sheet here, and you're gonna, sometimes I don't fill everything out. Okay. So the writers for the film are Cian Hedder and Victoria Bedos. It's directed by Cian Hedder. And you know, I think this was originally it was Victoria Bedos wrote the original version. It was actually a foreign film. Can't quite remember where it was out of originally. Maybe a French film. Look it up. I should do my research better. it was a foreign film and then adapted to here, like most. The cast here, Amelia Jones, Eugenio Derbez, Troy Kotsur, Feridia Walsh Pilo, Daniel Durant, Marley Matlin, Amy Forsyth, and Kevin Chapman. The only person in the film that I knew going into this was Marley Matlin. You may know her. She is a deaf actress. She West Wing. A lot of people knew her from that. There was a lot of she's been a lot of films occasionally pops in when you need a deaf actress. They would always call Marley Matlin. Interesting thing about this film is they had cast her, and they were actually going to try to cast for two other roles in it that are deaf. They were going to cast hearing people. Marley threatened to back out of the film if they did that. She wanted deaf actors, and she helped them find them to cast. So some, her dad in it, or not her dad, her husband in it, the dad of the film, he was he had done productions with her, like Springtime, a musical. I don't know how they did it. I guess they just signed the song and everything. He'd done there. Their son they cast, they just found him looking. So okay, the story in their own words: as a CODA, which stands for Child of Deaf Adults, Ruby is the only hearing person in her deaf family. When the family's fishing business is threatened, Ruby finds herself torn between pursuing her love of music and her fear of abandoning her parents. So yeah, this is crazy. It is. It's a film essentially about a hearing person from a hearing girl from a deaf family. She's the only one that can hear, and she loves music and singing. She kind of wants to become a singer. And, you know, which when you think about it, it's like, oh, how, like, her family would never know. And that's part of it, Darren. They don't know if she's even a good singer. when they discover that she's like this. You know, because how would they? And the mom says something interesting in it. She's like, oh, if I was blind, would you become a painter? Which is like a knife, right? Oh, because she can't share it with her. And it's crazy because you see a lot of films about coming of age where, oh, my parents don't get me. My parents don't understand me. And what a great vehicle to really show how that is, how separate you are from your parents when you almost live in two different communities where they are in their deaf community, which is just almost just each other. And then a hearing world that Ruby lives in. And it's fascinating. And the film, I thought it was really good while watching. It was really good. And then they hit a couple scenes that popped it over the edge for me that I wept so hard. There's a couple scenes in there that I loved them so much. I had to tell my wife about them the next day. And I was telling her about them. And I started crying, telling her about these scenes because they're just so, so beautiful. Such lovely moments in the film that I was blown away. I wasn't expecting it. I just thought it sounded like a interesting story, and let me see what's happened. Let me see how it goes. And yeah, I just thought that someone was going to enjoy that. Oh my, it was touching. It was a touching film. Wonderful, wonderful film. Now the three best things about the film, I put the original story. I like the, and I will say, while it's not, I think the coming of age story, there are elements to it that don't seem very original. Like, oh, I don't get with my parents, right? But nothing's been told this way. I don't know of another film that's told this story. And not only the deaf parents are also, deaf family is also like fishermen, right? Like, I don't see a lot of fisherman films personally, but yeah, very original story. Number two, amazing moments that stir emotion. Number three, the acting throughout the film. Everybody is on par and believable and wonderful, and you get what's going on with them. This is just a thoroughly well-acted film. There's nobody that even hints at not being great at their craft. Okay. And the young Ruby, I mean, she's young actress, perfect part for her. She just played it so well. Three worst things about the film. Honestly, I don't know if I had to dig for these, because there's not much I didn't like about the film. So what here? I felt, number one, the story is a bit predictable, you know, because I think I know the path that it's going to go early on. Though the route is unexpected and catches me off guard. I think I know how it's going to go in the beginning, and it sort of does. I don't know how they were going to get there, and I think that's why we watch a lot of films. I think we know how a lot are going to go, but we just don't know. Just don't know how they'll get there, and that's what's interesting about them. Number two, I wanted to know more about the parents and see what they were talking about from the past. There's a lot that the parents allude to of how they have dealt with the world and how they're treated, but we don't see a lot of that. See little hints at it, but not a lot. I wanted to know more about it. I wish I could have seen something that made me understand who they were. Okay. And number three, I put that it ended. I just wanted it to keep going. I love these characters so much. And I know there won't be a sequel because it would be useless. And it shouldn't. That's spoiling a good thing. Don't have a sequel to this, please. Let it just sit there. It's a wonderful little story that should just be left on its own and to be enjoyed. And don't ruin this by taking these characters further, even though that's what I really want. I'll write the fan fiction, okay? I'll read fan fiction of it, but don't taint it. Again, the lessons. I got two lessons out of this. One, parents never understand their children. And two, love is the universal translator. Okay? I'm taking a lot of lessons today from films. Okay. The final word of the film, it's one of the best films of the year. Don't let that simple premise fool you. This movie is full of heart, dreams, and trying to understand. The verdict with my 3L system, I got to give it a love it. I absolutely love this film, and I hope everybody watches it. I hope to see it nominated for awards. I'm afraid it won't be. I'm afraid it's going to get lost. You know, we got awards for Sundance and such, and I just don't know that enough people are going to hear about it from Apple TV Plus, Apple Plus TV. I don't even know what the streaming service is actually called, right? I just know the words. I don't know which order. It could be Plus Apple TV, right? Streaming, whatever. I hope it doesn't get lost because it was truly a wonderful film. So there it is, folks. Two for you today. We got Coda. We've got Shang-Chi and the Legend of Ten Rings. I was going to try to do a third. I couldn't do a third movie, but I got or TV show maybe. I'll say this. If you haven't watched Ted Lasso, go start watching that because I'm on that right now. Ted Lasso is very enjoyable. Okay. Ted Lasso. It's on Apple TV Plus. So while you're watching Ted Lasso, go turn over and watch Coda. Okay. Ted Lasso is hilarious. It's about a soccer coach, sort of. About a coach. And I started coaching my daughter's soccer team. So now I feel like it's very relatable. Anyway, folks, that's it. That's the program for today. Black and Half Reviews, thank you so much for tuning in to this episode number 175. I appreciate you. I appreciate everybody out there. And until next time, I'm Silas Lindenstein. Black and a Half.
Stand by.
Join us. Impressive.
Join us. Impressive.
Join us.
Impressive.
Live long and prosper.